She shook her head. No, you don't have to do that. It's my job, and I'm all about finishing what I set out to do.
You're not just talking about pumpkins, right?
I moved to Keene's Harbor for a reason. To start a new life and build something I can be proud of.
And I'm the guy trying to take that away from you? It's not personal. It's business. And it was in the works a long time before you even moved to Keene's Harbor.
Kate crossed her arms. Look, I know that, but that doesn't mean I like it. And I'm going to find your saboteur, collect my $20,000 bonus, and buy back my house. Kate didn't want to even think about the fact that a contractor had spent an entire day at her house trying to locate and fix her water leaks. She didn't have the money to pay him either. Yet. And she wasn't about to ask her parents for help. She wasn't even sure they had the money, what with her father retired and living on long-held investments.
Right now, all I want to do is carve a pumpkin, Matt said. Cut me a break here.
Well, since you put it that way, I could use a break too. I'm pretty much pumpkined out. He smiled.
Consider yourself sprung.
Kate grabbed a cart and loaded it with 4 jack-o'-lanterns. She made her way to the front of the house, where costumed beer lovers had already gathered. Once there, she slowed her pace enough to check out the guests. The event, like her emotional state, was high school all over again. The women had taken the borderline body path to apparel, while the men had gone for a minimal effort. Among the male ranks, there looked to have been quite a run on Grim Reaper costumes. Kate counted 5 of them in the crowd already. 2 Grims were tall and skinny, and the other 3 of more well-fed dimensions. The tap room was in full Halloween mode, too. The front windows were edged with strands of orange lights that glowed warmly against the dark wood trim. Tea lights adorned each table, adding to the festive look. And an appetizer bar had been draped with orange linens and decorated with absurdly grinning skulls that shone from within. Kate wished she could stay and mingle, but there was work to be done. She thanked one of the tall and skinny Grims as he held open the front door for her and the pumpkin cart. A sharp blast of wind greeted her. No doubt a storm was brewing out on the lake. Chilled, she hustled the cart over the mosaic mural, then hung a left to the end of the jack-o'-lantern line that Layla had already started. Once Kate had her pumpkins in place, she patted her pockets for a light. She had none, of course. She turned her back to the wind and headed to the bar to snag a pack of matches. Inside, she spotted Layla chatting with a Grim Reaper. Market owner Marcy Landon was with them. She was very fittingly costumed as a tape measure. The bit of tape showing from the front of the bright yellow box was probably marked to perfect scale. The tall and skinny Grim definitely liked Layla, hovering close enough to be in her personal space. Layla didn't seem to be objecting either. She was laughing at something that the Reaper had just said. Kate smiled, waved, and moved on. Outside again, she hunkered down by the first jack-o'-lantern and pulled out her pack of matches. 2 sputtered and died even before she could get them to the tea light waiting inside, and the next 2 were snuffed by a draft coming through the pumpkin's eyes. Okay, then, she said to herself and sat down cross-legged on the sidewalk. Clearly, she would be there a while. You need a lighter. Kate looked up past a pair of sensible white server sneakers and standard depot uniform to Layla's serene face. I don't suppose you have one, Kate asked. Layla pulled out a rectangular silver lighter adorned with what looked to be crystals. She flipped it open with a distinctive click, bent down, and did in 2 seconds what Kate hadn't accomplished in 4 matches. Sometimes the old things are the best, Layla said. Kate smiled. Obviously, you haven't seen my house. At 11 that night, Kate lay in bed, unable to sleep. The contractor had found her leak. Evidently, when Junior had regrouted the shower tile in her master bathroom, he hadn't inspected the shower pan. It had completely failed. Even worse, he'd reset the toilet without a proper seal, and raw sewage had swept underneath her bathroom floor. The water damage from the shower and toilet had infiltrated her living room, causing her floor to warp. The contractor was coming back tomorrow to pull up her water-damaged floor and tile. Kate had tried to call Junior several times, but he wasn't answering, probably in his best interest given the problems he'd caused.
The good news was that it seemed like a pretty simple fix, and the contractor thought he could do it for a couple $1,000s. More than Kate had, but doable, especially with the bonus money she planned to earn. Kate set aside the magazine she'd been leafing through. An article on 10 ways to drive him wild wasn't what she needed to get Matt Culhane out of her head. Indulging in each of those 10 with him might do the job, but she wasn't going there. Kate's cell phone rang, and she jumped at the unfamiliar sound. She hadn't received too many phone calls since her big move away from the city. Hello?
Hey, Katie Bug?
Dad?
I know it's late, but I picked up this new phone today that does everything but clean the pool. I wanted to be sure I had your number right.
Her father sounded pretty chipper. About one double Manhattan's worth was her guess. She could picture him sitting in a lounge chair out back of their Florida house with the pool lights and stars shining. He was probably wearing his favorite navy cardigan and black and white seersucker trousers. And Mom was probably inside pining for the days of wholesome television and good old-fashioned family values. Kate loved her parents, but it was like they'd just been freed from a 1960s time capsule. You got the number right, Dad. But he'd never called it before, always opting for the landline when she lived back downstate. And she hadn't heard from either her mom or her dad since that highly uncomfortable family dinner 3 months ago when she'd had to admit how broke she was. Of course, she hadn't called them since then either.
So, as long as we're chatting, I was wondering how the nutshell is, her dad asked.
The house is fine, Dad.
No issues with the plumbing? I know we're due for a new septic system.
It's all good, she said.
And that loose step on the way down to the beach?
I nailed it back down, she fibbed. Fact was, she hadn't ventured to the water. All she'd done since she'd landed in Keene's Harbor was focus on finding a job and nailing down her future. Beach walks had seemed like a luxury she hadn't earned just yet.
Well, that's just great,
her dad said with more enthusiasm than the conversation warranted. Are you and Mom okay? There's nothing going on down there that I should know about, is there? She asked.
We're fine, Kate, just fine. How's a refrigerator? He asked. Do you need any help stocking it?
They'd finally reached the real purpose of the call. Kate was glad no one was around to witness her embarrassment. The last time her dad had asked questions like this, her brother, sister, and their respective spouses had been watching. Kate had felt like the loser girl on a reality TV show. I promise I have more than diet soda and shriveled up apples in the fridge, she said. She still had that head of purple cauliflower after all. But so long as she loaded up on the cheap employee meals at work, shopping was optional.
Just checking. I know things have been tight.
It's okay. I found a job.
Really? What are you doing?
I'm washing dishes and doing prep work at Depot Brewing. The line fell quiet for a beat.
That's great. It's a tough job market out there. You should be proud. If you come up short, let me know and I'll slip a care package your way. Just like your old college days.
Ugh. Kate knew he was trying to be positive and supportive, but she was right back to feeling like the loser girl. Kate wanted to be there for her parents like her siblings were, not the other way around. Thanks for the offer, but I'm doing great, she said. And it was true. If great could be defined as able to splurge on a fake cappuccino the next time she put gas in the Jeep.
Just say the word, Katie Bug.
She wouldn't, though. Her parents were retired, and money didn't grow on trees. They probably had a woefully out-of-date concept of how much money was needed to get the house in shape. But more important, Kate had something to prove. Not to her parents, but to herself. She could stand on her own. Chapter 6 On Friday night, Matt walked into Woodsman's Hall with a parent at each elbow. The crowded room was filled with laughter and the blended smells of 3 dozen casseroles that probably all included crispy fried onions. This was an old-school Keene's Harbor food and gossip fest right down to its location. Other than getting an occasional refresher coat of paint, the long and narrow single-story hall hadn't changed in 100 years. Matt felt pretty okay with being there until he saw Dina Bowen over by the beer table. In her bright blue V-neck dress, Dina was as much a knockout as she had been on the one date they'd had together. One date had been more than enough for Matt, but not for Dina, and a woman scorned is a woman to be feared. Matt turned his head before Dina could catch him looking. It was the same technique he used when faced with a black bear in the woods. Dina and that bear bore a lot in common personality-wise.
"You're dragging your feet, son," Matt's father said. "Just soaking it all in."
"Come along, Patrick," his mother said. "I want to see what's over in the silent auction." Harley Baggers offered up a couple of lighters from his collection, and Enid Erickson was donating some of those fun toilet paper covers. You know, the ones with the dolls' heads and frilly dresses? His parents headed to the back of the hall, Dad with less fervor than Mom. Matt stuck to the front. One of those blank-eyed dolls would be staring at him from the back of a toilet at his parents' home soon enough. Mom would probably give him one for Christmas, too. Unfortunately, Chuck could sniff out chewy plastic items the way most of his breed could raccoons. The doll would be history. Matt stopped and talked with Bart, his brewmaster, and Buddy about the upcoming hockey season. They were defending league champs, and Bart had his eye on a prospect to be sure they stayed that way. Matt gave Bart a fist bump and took the slow route toward the three refreshment tables. The first held soda and mixers, followed by high-octane punch, and then beer. He stopped and chatted with as many folks as he could. He wanted to give Dina time to move on. Cleet Erickson, the town police chief and husband to toilet paper doll maker Enid, was manning the brew table. Cleet reminded Matt a little of Chuck. Not that Cleet was missing a limb. He just had the same droopy hound features.
"Hey, Chief," Matt said.
Cleet returned the greeting and slid a red plastic cup of beer Matt's way.
"Guess you're wanting one of these."
"Sure am."
Matt took a sip and scanned the stream of new arrivals flowing into the hall. And then he saw her. Kate was a flash of scarlet sweater and spiky blonde hair, so obvious among the less vivid colors surrounding her. The night was looking up. "It's a towny motherlode," Kate said to Ella as they worked their way into Woodsman's Hall. The place was packed, which made it all the better to be with Ella. Kate's friend was gorgeous. She was tall, with straight black hair that just swept her shoulders. She also possessed a figure that Kate envied but didn't want to work to attain. Crowds just kind of parted for Ella.
"This is also the safest place on Earth," Ella said.
Kate could see why. She'd already spotted a handful of police officers and most of the volunteer fire department, all of whom she recognized from her brief stint at Baggers. As Ella and she wove through the throng toward Ella's unstated destination, Kate said hello to the people she recognized. She was pleased to even get a few return greetings that didn't come with that confused, "Where do I know her from?" look in the eyes. "Where are we heading?" Kate asked her friend over the noise of the music that had just started.
"Beer table for the first stop," Ella said.
"I don't suppose there's a wine table?"
Ella shot her a dubious look. "You're not serious, are you?"
She had been, but she'd never admit it. Ella had a conspiratorial look in her eye. "I have a plan for you.
And beer is part of it? If you don't want a beer, just make sure you grab something to drink because you're going to need it."
"That sounds marginally dangerous."
"If it's only marginally, we're doing pretty good," Ella said.
They rounded food tables packed with the kind of calories a sensible woman would avoid, but which Kate considered staples. She looked away from the temptation, but suddenly the evening's danger factor rose. Matt stood at the beer table, and something way hotter than hunger for ham casserole rippled through Kate.
"Hi, Matt," Ella called.
Matt very slowly turned his attention from Kate. This was a first, since usually when Ella called, guys hopped too.
"He's into you," Ella said to Kate in a low voice.
Kate shook off the moment. "Punch sounds good. Really good." She moved on to the table directly to the left of Matt. Ella lined up with Matt, got a cup of beer, and chatted a little with Cleet Erickson. Kate investigated the punch. Clearly, this was the grandma drink, complete with the obligatory island of orange sherbet slowly melting in a sea of bright pink liquid studded with chunks of melon and strawberry.
not her beverage of choice, but still about 10,000 spots ahead of beer. She ladled herself a big plastic cup, trying to avoid the fruit. If anyone was going to have the bad luck to create a scene with a public fruit-choking incident, Kate knew she'd be that person. To make up for the fruit, she added a little more punch, plus some of the orange stuff. She glanced over and caught Matt watching her, a broad smile on his face.
"You sure you want to drink that?"
he asked. "Not really, but I'm going to give it a try anyway."
Note the people lining up for the beer, and note the continuing absence of people at your table. What does that tell you?
The Keens Harbor is a haven for beer snobs?
He grinned. Live and learn.
She raised her cup of sludge in a sketchy toast. That's my general plan. Ella, who'd been watching, fought back a laugh. Kate glanced into her cup again. It wasn't the prettiest stuff she'd ever seen, but it couldn't be that bad. We need to get moving, Ella said. We'll catch you later, Matt. With that, she snagged Kate by the wrist and began hauling her and her foaming punch back past the siren-like lure of the casseroles. You still sing, right? Ella asked. The summer they were 16, they had nothing better to do than drive around town and sing along to the radio. Kate had a shiny new driver's license and a less shiny hand-me-down car. And when they'd needed money for more gasoline, Ella had played the guitar and Kate had sung on the street corner until they had change for a few gallons or the police told them to close up shop. Not even in the shower. I keep the water temperature set too low to carry a tune, Kate replied. They passed through what was obviously a silent auction area. Kate halted at a collection of old vinyl albums up for bid. Her parents had stuck their ancient stereo at the nutshell. There was nothing Kate would like more than to mix a little retro Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin in with a Frank Sinatra and Barbara Streisand already in residence. Ella nudged her along. No time to window shop. You've got music of your own to make. Kate noticed the small stage at the back of the long hall. About a half dozen people were in a line to the stage's left, and Marcy Landon was on stage aligning a microphone stand behind a monitor of some sort. She seemed to be giving the arrangement the same OCD level of scrutiny she gave the shelves at her market. As they came closer to the group, Kate started picking out the particulars. Junior Greinwald, with his trusty blue cooler at his feet, was flipping through an aged three-ring binder while a guy and another woman Kate didn't recognize were peering at it from either side of him. A liquor-tinged memory of a party in someone's basement and a lot of really bad versions of Pour Some Sugar on Me came back to her. Kate stopped dead. Karaoke? No way! Ella settled a hand on Kate's arm and drew her to the edge of the room.
You wanted to know how to become part of the town again, right?
Yes.
Then rule in karaoke.
You're kidding. I thought the only place you could still find it was in ratty college bars.
It's become the favored competitive sport in Keens Harbor. See those chairs?
Ella pointed to three chairs lined up at the far edge of the dance floor in front of the stage.
Judges, Olympic scoring, the whole thing.
Now come on. Kate looked around. Isn't there an arm wrestling or kielbasa eating challenge I could do instead?
Just get on up there, Ella said.
What, alone? You're going to make me do this and you're not singing?
I still can't carry a tune, but you can. Do this, Kate. I'm telling you, it will help.
When she'd asked Ella for help in being accepted as one of the locals, she'd been thinking of something that might have taken a bit less effort and potential for humiliation on her part. But she trusted Ella. And what had dignity ever gotten her anyway?
Okay, then. Just stick by my side until I get a song under my belt.
I'll be your personal assistant, I promise, Ella said. Let me hold your drink for you. They joined the field of karaoke Olympians.
No cuts, said a woman at the back of the line.
Kate blew out a sigh.
No problem.
Ella drew Kate back a few steps, her voice lowered.
That's Dina Bowen. She's about 5 years older than us, so you missed out on her when we were kids. She's also the town's undisputed karaoke queen, among a couple of other less perky titles.
Such as?
Psycho Revenge Queen. She's always verbally gunning for Matt, and from what I've heard, they only had one date, though I guess she lobbied long and hard even for that one.
She's a little spooky. Do you think she'd ever do more than just badmouth him? Kate asked Ella.
I don't know. She's bitter for sure, but I think she's just acting out over a whole lot of bad stuff in her life. Ella paused long enough to give her a teasing smile. Why? Are you worried about being in the line of fire if you date him?
You don't have to be dating a guy to want to see him stay in one piece.
She inclined her head toward Dina.
And you have to admit she's somewhere south of hostile. It rolls off her in waves.
Ahead of Dina, Junior was pacing back and forth, shaking his arms and repeating ma, me, my, mo, moo as his apparent warm-up exercise. Dina hissed at him to shut up before she had him sedated. Junior picked up his cooler and walked away from Dina to practice next to Kate.
How's it going, Junior? Kate asked.
Junior glanced at Kate and hugged his cooler.
Fine.
Don't you want to know how things are going for me?
Junior hugged the cooler even tighter.
I guess so.
Well, I'm glad you asked. I've been trying to call you for 2 days. The improvements you made to my toilet and shower leaked all over my entire house. The contractor was there today. Do you know what he found when he pulled up the floor?
Junior looked a little ashamed. Kate suspected it wasn't his first plumbing disaster.
Dookie.
That's right. Lots of dirty dookie and mold. There were guys in hazmat suits in my house for 8 hours containing the affected area with plastic sheeting and setting up negative air blowers to suction all the mold outdoors.
Junior bit his lower lip and shoved his hands into his pockets.
I heard they can be a little noisy.
Kate's eyes were as big as dinner plates.
It sounds like a hurricane is blowing through my house.
Everyone, come line up back here, Marcy said from the stage, rescuing Junior and gathering the group behind a white wooden latticework screen that had been decorated with plastic ivy. Not the most attractive ivy Kate had ever seen, but she was glad for whatever cover from the audience she could find. She needed to get her stuff together before facing them.
For the benefit of the new entrant, I'm going to repeat our standing rules, Marcy announced.
Kate gave a quick wave in acknowledgement to the other contestants now scoping her out. Happily, only Dina looked like she meant to inflict bodily harm. Everyone else nodded or waved back.
There are 6 of you singing. We will determine the order of competition in the first round by pulling numbers from the bingo cage.
She patted the cage in question, and the balls in it quivered.
Lowest number goes first. 2 competitors will be eliminated in each of the first 2 rounds, leaving 2 finalists for the Kamikaze Challenge.
Kate raised her hand like the obedient student she'd never quite been.
In a moment, Kate, Marcy replied. The judges' scores are final. No bribes will be accepted or threats tolerated.
She said the last with a pointed stare at Dina.
And tonight's winner will receive the grand prize of 5 pounds of venison burger provided by Harley Bagger.
If Kate was going to sing for her supper, she would have appreciated something non-Bambi-like, but she wasn't here for the chow.
You had a question, Kate? Marcy asked.
What's a kamikaze challenge?
In the final round, a song will be selected at random for you from the playlist.
Dina snickered.
As if you have to worry.
Marcy gave Dina a glare. And no sabotage either. Now, if you'll excuse me.
She walked back out to the microphone, leaving Kate and the other singers hidden behind the plastic jungle.
And tonight's judges, chosen at semi-random from among our guests, will be...
She looked down at his sheet of paper.
Starflower Creed, Shea Van Antwerp, and Matt Culhane.
Chapter 7. Matt flipped through a stack of albums being offered in the town's garage sale of a silent auction. Actually, if he thought he could consistently find a stash of music like this in local garages, he'd be joining his mom on the Saturday morning circuit. Next to him stood Lizzie. She must have pulled the short straw in the Keep Matt Here challenge because she hadn't left his side in the past 10 minutes. And somewhere at the very back of the room, Marcy Landham was calling names over the sound system. Matt picked up his head at the sound of something all too familiar.
Did I just hear my name? He asked Lizzie.
I don't know. Did you?
His sister's smile was nothing short of smug. This was never a good sign. Again, his name drifted above the crowd.
Matt? Matt Culhane?
That's definitely your name, Lizzie said.
It is, but I have the option of ignoring it, he said, testing Lizzie's level of investment in whatever was going down.
His little sister tried to hip-check him away from the album collection. Come on, she said. Let's go see. Maybe you won something.
He held her off long enough to write a bid on the vinyl collection big enough to scare off competitors. He knew that wasn't the silent auction spirit, but he wasn't messing around. There were a pile of Doors and Jefferson Airplane in that stack.
Marcy waved her hand, urging him toward the stage.
Matt, there you are.
What am I here for?
She laughed as though he'd made a joke. Ladies and gentlemen, our third judge is now taking his seat. Let the karaoke competition begin, she said with a flourish and hurried back behind the screen.
You set me up, Matt said to Lizzie.
Fact, but think of judging as an exercise in civic duty. We all have to do it. It's your turn, and now that you're trapped, I can go have fun. While thinking of a fitting revenge to eventually spring on his sister, Matt made his way to the open judge's chair. He settled between Starflower and Shay. Starflower, one of the silver-haired elders of the Creed commune outside of town, said,
Remember, Matt, peace comes from within.
She didn't generally offer up platitudes without a purpose.
I take it you've judged these before? He asked.
She gave a slow nod of her head, closed her eyes, and began humming to herself. Matt wondered if he was catching a whiff of something less legal than the scent of Starflower's lavender oil, which she sold in a shop the commune owned in town. Matt preferred to find his inner peace the way he'd been raised, family, friends, and hard work. To his right, Shay Van Antwerp flicked her perfectly straight and shiny blonde hair over her shoulders.
I was told we'd be up on the stage. That's the only reason I agreed to judge.
At least she'd been given a choice. Besides, Matt understood Shay's stage addiction. She'd been Little Miss Keene's Harbor for 4 years running when they were kids. After that, Shay had been hooked. If there was a sash or crown to be won, she was in the race. Matt had always thought that if Shay redirected all that energy and determination, she could govern a small nation, kind of like Kate. He wondered what she was making of this whole scene. If it was odd to him, it had to be downright surreal to her. Dina Bowen was truly psycho.
You cheated, Dina said.
How could I cheat? Marcy drew the numbers, Kate replied.
You came in here earlier and rigged it.
Why would I do that?
Because everybody's out to beat me. But just because you get to sing first doesn't mean you're going to win. It doesn't give you any advantage, Dina said.
Another good reason I wouldn't come in and play with a bunch of bingo balls, don't you think?
Dina's hostility aside, Kate was looking forward to getting this first number done. She hadn't sung in front of strangers since she was 16, and the idea of doing it now had her a little rattled. And the idea of having Matt judge her was even more uncomfortable.
Ready? Marcy asked.
Kate nodded. Because her mouth was as dry as the dunes overlooking Lake Michigan, she poked her head out from the far side of the jungle screen and signaled Ella for the punch. Kate chugged half and winced. The concoction was so sweet that she swore her blood had just turned to syrup. Ella gave her a weird look as she took back the cup.
What?
Kate asked.
You feel okay?
Nervous, and now probably borderline diabetic.
Ella waggled the cup.
That's okay, you won't be feeling anything very soon.
What do you mean?
This is trash can punch. Beneath all that sugar is enough overproof rum to pickle a sailor. All I can say is good thing I drove.
Thanks for sharing. If I'd known about the punch, I'd have started drinking earlier.
Kate, Marcy said, curtain time. Except for the crucial lack of a curtain. Palms clammy and heart slamming, Kate stepped out from behind the latticework jungle and walked tentatively to the microphone. She allowed herself a glance toward Matt, then wished she hadn't. As surprise and then pleasure paraded across his face, Kate had to quell a truly chicken-feathered urge to jump from the stage and chug the rest of that overproof courage. But if this was what it took to be initiated into Keene's Harbor, no way was she going to back down.
I'm going to give you a little Crimson and Clover, Joan Jett style, she said into the microphone.
Kate didn't care that half of the hall still talked and laughed as the music started. All that mattered was reaching the end of the song. She hadn't lied when she told Ella she hadn't been singing, but more than the chilly shower had been stopping her. In the space of 1 year, she'd lost her marriage, her home, her dog, and her job. She wasn't exactly depressed, but she was just flat-out busy trying to rebuild her life and her identity. Most of the time, she just felt too tired to sing. But as she eased into the song, Kate recalled one cool thing about singing. When singing, she didn't have to be Kate of the somewhat screwed-up life. She became whatever character she chose to take on. And tonight, she chose to be a rocker seductress. Kate let herself go with the song's sensual sway and began to kick out the lyrics with conviction. This wasn't about winning Bambi meet or even town approval. It was about living in this moment. It was about feeling the slow, sexual surge that made her grip the microphone stand with both hands and make love to the crowd. When the song finished, Kate dropped her gaze to the plywood stage and blew out a sigh of relief. She was fairly certain she hadn't sucked. Except the hall remained weirdly silent. Okay, maybe she was delusional. Maybe she really had sucked. Just when she was sure that was true, applause and a couple of whistles and howls kicked in. Kate smiled at the crowd and said her thanks. Then she caught Matt looking at her with an intensity she'd never gotten from any other man, not even from Richard. She felt as though the stage was rocking and rolling beneath her feet. It wasn't the not-so-grandma punch, though. This was a punch of another kind, one of sheer hunger and absolute sexual certainty. Matt wasn't messing around. Now Kate got why women trailed after him as though they'd lost their favorite plaything. Still, she refused to fall for him, no matter how hot that landing might be. Without even looking at the scorecards the judges now held aloft, Kate escaped the stage while her legs could still carry her. Matt was a goner. He was ready to serve himself up to Kate however she wanted him, preferably naked, and even more preferably, tonight. Matt listened to a damn fine version of My Wild Irish Rose by Junior and an equally scary rendition of Do You Think I'm Sexy by Dina. But all of that was second to wondering how he could get Kate alone. He really liked her. Ironically, that made things more complicated. Not that he was going to let that stop him, or even slow him down. Marcy stepped on stage, aligned the microphone to her satisfaction, and announced the second round finalists. Kate had made the cut. Starflower leaned over to speak to Matt.
"We get a 10-minute reprieve before they start the next round."
"You mean a break?" Matt asked.
"No, definitely a reprieve," she said. "I'm stepping outside to meditate and make myself one with the evening peace."
Or peace pipe. As for Matt, he planned to meditate on how to make progress with Kate. The overproof rum had kicked in and was burning through Kate like jet fuel. She didn't feel buzzed so much as energized. Sometime around midnight, when both the alcohol and the sugar had wreaked their havoc, she knew she'd be parched and cranky, and no doubt still sleepless. Too late for regrets, though. She looked out at the people gathered behind the judges, and Kate the performer took over. It was round two of the Great Karaoke Olympics, and Kate was into it. "Marvin Gaye's Sexual Healing," she said into the microphone. Kate ripped into the song, enjoying her time in the spotlight, loving the lyrics, loving the music, thinking that life was full of moments just like this, unexpected, surprising moments. And Kate realized that unless you put yourself out there, you could very easily miss them. Maybe it was time to take some more risks with her life. A low howl drifted into the room from somewhere outside. The sound slowly raised in both pitch and volume, and people began to turn and head toward the door. Kate knew her voice wasn't chasing them off. She'd witnessed this scene before at Bagger's Tavern. The place could go from full to empty in 60 seconds flat when the town's volunteer firefighters heard the alarm sound. "Fire," Ella mouthed from the base of the stage. She pointed toward the door, and Kate nodded in acknowledgement. Ella was one of the handful of women who served on the town's fire department. More people filed out, but Kate kept singing. Now she knew how the band on the Titanic had felt. A woman who looked kind of like Matt leaned over his shoulder and said something to him. He stood. Kate didn't like the grim look on his face. She finished, skipped her bow, and made a moderately graceful jump from the low stage. "What's going on?"
"There's a fire at the brewery," Matt said. "Could you come with me?"
"Of course," she said, because she decided not to let herself lust after Matt Culhane, but she darned well liked him. Matt looked at the crowd gathered in his parking lot. In Keene's Harbor, the only thing that drew a bigger crowd than a Friday night fundraiser was a good old-fashioned dumpster fire. There was such a weirdly festive atmosphere that he half expected to see the spectators pull out marshmallows and start toasting them. Of course, the spectators would have to fight their way through the most massive contingent of first responders that Matt had seen since the Independence Day fireworks debacle of 90. Since he'd been intimately involved in the accidental early start to that annual celebration, he'd watched that group from afar. "Is the whole town here?" Kate asked.
"More or less."
He found a spot for his truck and immediately noticed an ambulance parked at the brewery's employee door. The vehicle's back door was open and the interior was lit. Inside, a familiar figure lay on a stretcher. Matt sprinted over to the ambulance. He'd barely reached it when Kate joined him. For a little thing, she had a long stride.
"Give me a second," he said to her.
"I'll be right here." Matt didn't recognize the two paramedics working on Layla. All the same, he climbed into the back of the ambulance. One of the paramedics was inflating some sort of air cast around Layla's ankle. "You'll have to get out, sir," she said. Layla tried to prop herself up on her elbows despite the paramedic's orders to stay still.
"He'll stay right where he is. Work around him." "What happened?"
Matt asked.
"Twisted it hard."
She winced as she tried to settle more comfortably on the stretcher.
"I had stepped outside for a second to use my phone when I saw the fire. I called 911, but the fencing around the dumpster was already burning. I tried to run a hose from the loading dock door. The hose ran me instead, I guess. Broke my phone when I went down, too."
"Don't worry about the phone. I'll get you another one," Matt said. "Let's work on getting you fixed, okay?"
Layla had been with him since the day he'd started serving food. Yeah, she could be a little bossy, but he'd learned more from her than he could have from any number of highly paid consultants. She was family, plain and simple, and he felt sick that she had been hurt trying to help him.
"We're ready to roll,"
the larger of the paramedics said. Matt touched Layla gently on her shoulder.
"Can I do anything for you?"
"Get a hold of my son Joe. Tell him where I am and that someone's going to need to come get my car."
"No problem, and I'll be over to the emergency room in just a while."
"Don't you dare. You've got enough to deal with right here. Cleet already shut you down for the night."
At that news, Matt bit back on a couple of his favorite curse words.
"The dumpster was too far from the building for a spark to fly. And even if one did, the roof's metal," he said.
"I know," Layla replied. "But you know Cleet, and Steve went to look for Jerry to argue the closing, but Jerry was nowhere to be found."
"Don't worry," Matt said. "Just focus on getting yourself better and let me deal with the rest of this, okay?"
"I will."
He gave her hand a squeeze, which was about all the affection Layla would accept.
"Hang in there," he said before climbing out.
Kate still stood watching the firefighters spray down the smoking dumpster and fence. "Arson is definitely buzzkill," she said without looking his way. She'd voiced what Matt had been thinking since they'd pulled into the parking lot. If not for all the other incidents, Matt would have attributed it to Steve sneaking a cigarette by the trash. Matt had snagged him doing that countless times.
"It is, and I know I'm lucky it wasn't worse. Layla's fall was bad enough."
"She'll be okay, though, right?"
"I don't know if her ankle is sprained or broken, but she'll recover."
He paused.
"And probably demand to come back to work long before she's ready, too."
"Speaking of which, besides Layla, who was on staff tonight?"
"The usual. Amber and Steve were in the dining room. Ruby was bussing dishes. Pat, Ronaldo, and Manny were in the kitchen. And Jerry was supposed to be here. Not that he is."
He paused a second.
"Before I left for the hall, Nan and Floyd were in the brewery working on one of Bart's new beer recipes. I don't know if they're still around. So what it comes down to is any one of my own employees could have done this to me.
Or maybe just a random firebug. I'm betting Keene's Harbor has a pyro or two, she said. What's frustrating is that I'd like to say everyone at the fundraiser can be dropped from the suspect list, but it's too easy to make it here from the hall to say that for sure. Matt understood frustration. He was frustrated that his night's business was literally going up in smoke. He was angry that someone had made jerking him around their new hobby, and he was furious with himself for permitting them to mess with his ability to coolly sort through the facts. Kate briefly settled her hand against his arm.
Hey, this isn't going to go on forever. It's going to be okay.
Now would be a good time for it to end.
Agreed, she said. Should we talk to the fire chief?
That's up next.
Mind if I come along?
Not at all. A set of objective ears is good. But you should know that Norm's more about putting the fire out than any kind of investigating. That's one of the quirks of having a volunteer fire department.
Still, if you tell him about all the other things that have happened, he'll have to see a pattern.
You and I might, but unless you've been living through it, it's a tough pattern to see.
He led her to the back of the fire truck, where Chief Norm stood talking to Cleet Erickson.
Sorry about this, Matt,
Norm said as they neared. The fire chief had been of average size in his active days as a charter fishing boat captain. Retirement had caught up with him, though. Now he was shaped like his favorite bowling ball. Still, he remained surprisingly agile.
Thanks for getting the fire put out, Matt said.
Norm nodded.
A few of us are going to stick around a while in case any hotspots flare up.
Great. Will you start your arson investigation tonight or wait for first light?
Norm looked surprised.
It's a dumpster fire, Matt.
What makes you think it's arson? The fence was burning. You can't believe that the entire enclosure sparked and went up without an accelerant.
Son, what does a dumpster hold but trash?
Cleet asked, but gave no time for an answer.
The ember from one cigarette butt could have set it off. I'll interview your employees, but I don't see any point in rattling the whole town with talk of arson.
The town will be talking anyway, Kate said. The police chief turned his head.
What did you say?
I said that the town will be talking anyway. That's what Keene's Harbor does, especially when the topic is as high profile as Matt and Depot Brewing. They bring more money to this town than any other five businesses combined. Failure to investigate won't make the talk go away. It will just get worse. Cleet moved a step closer to her.
Well now, little lady, I'm not sure what business any of this is of yours.
She looked up at Matt. Little lady? Did he just call me little lady? Yep, that had been a critical error on Cleet's part, Matt thought. And Matt was happy to urge her on. If anyone could help him quickly shake loose an investigation, it was Kate.
I believe he did,
Matt said. She turned back to Cleet. I might be little, and I might also be a lady, but I am not a little lady any more than you're the ghost of John Wayne, and even the ghost of the Duke playing a sheriff blindfolded would know this is arson. If you and Chief Norm aren't interested in investigating it, I'm sure someone is. Cleet was more puzzled than annoyed.
Didn't anyone ever tell you that you can catch more flies with honey than you can with vinegar?
She's right, Cleet, Matt said. If you don't step up, I'm going to have to call the county sheriff's office and bring them in. You don't want that.
There wasn't enough light to catch the look in Cleet's eyes, but Matt was betting it wasn't a happy one. Somehow Kate had hit his hot button without even knowing it. Or maybe she'd sensed it. Keene's Harbor wasn't flush with money. Cleet lived in fear of the town cutting back on its police coverage and using county services. Cleet stood taller, probably to make up for the fact that he was in civilian clothes.
Norm, if you're going to be staying, could you put crime scene tape around the dumpster area once it's cooled down?
He turned to Matt.
Could you tell your employees to stay in the restaurant until I can interview them? Site photos and talking more to Layla will have to wait until the light of day.
Thanks, Cleet,
Matt said. He glanced at Kate, who wore a victorious smile. Their methods might vary, but Matt appreciated another person of action when he came across one. And he was appreciating Kate Appleton more by the minute. Kate looked at Matt's profile in the dim illumination of his truck's dashboard lights. The guy was wiped out, and she couldn't blame him. He turned on to the nutshell's winding drive, then pulled up beside her Jeep.
Home again,
he said.
She took in the silhouette of her childhood home and felt comfort ease into her bones.
I am, she said.
That much at least felt very right. She smiled at the thought and the man who had triggered it.
Did you get dinner? She asked.
I never made it over to the food tables.
Why don't you come in? I don't have much outside the key food groups of chocolate and wine, but I'm sure I can pull something together.
Thanks, but I need to get back to the brewery and make sure everything's under control, then look in on Layla. How about if I take a rain check?
Sure, she said, even though she felt a little disappointed. She reached for the truck's door handle. Good night, then. Kate was about to exit the truck when Matt spoke again.
You're not scheduled for tomorrow, are you?
No.
Then I'd like you to take a road trip with me. I'll pick you up around 8.
Where are we going?
A motel.
A what? He smiled.
You heard me. We're going to a motel, among other places. But it's business. You can relax. For the moment.
Kate was guaranteed not to sleep at all.
Chapter 8.
A couple minutes before 8 on Saturday morning, Matt pulled into Kate's driveway. He reached for the closest of the 2 travel mugs of coffee he brought along. As he took a swallow, he also took advantage of the opportunity to check out the nutshell in the daylight. He'd bought the mortgage on the advice of his financial advisor, and his interest had been in the land and not the house. Last night, when Kate had cornered Cleet, she'd invoked the ghost of John Wayne. Matt had found it tough not to laugh, since he'd often thought Cleet purposely cultivated the look and attitude. But if Matt were to talk ghosts in the nutshell, he'd have to say the Rat Pack, with Frank Sinatra leading the charge, would hang out there. Once upon a time, this had been a top-of-the-line cottage, but that time had passed. The nutshell's upkeep had to be a bear by virtue of its size, not to mention its windy perch over Lake Michigan. Though Kate had limited Matt's indoor tour the other night, he'd guessed the house held at least 6 bedrooms, and probably more. The place's white paint was pulling away from its trim, its entry porch had begun to sag, and its silvery cedar shingles were becoming gap-toothed in places. The nutshell had character, though. He liked that it was as quirky as its current resident. The front door swung open, and Kate appeared. She wore dressy boots, snug jeans, a clingy red V-necked sweater, and had a huge brown leather purse slung over her shoulder. Matt slipped from behind the wheel and rounded his truck. He opened the passenger side door for her and waited while she climbed on board. "Was it this big last night?" she asked, clicking her seatbelt into place as they pulled out of her drive.
"What?"
"Your truck. Last night is kind of a haze of stage fright, adrenaline, and punch, so my memories are fuzzy. But it's like Land of the Giants in here. My feet barely even reach the floor." Her smile was brief, but it still made him feel good. "So the standard question would be, tell me, Culhane, are you compensating for something with this monster vehicle?"
He grinned. "I've never worried about compensating."
"Really?
Want to check?"
"I'll take your word for it," Kate said. That was a flirtatious warning shot across her bow, she thought. She'd set it up, and he'd followed in kind. It was fun, but she didn't want it to go further just yet. She dug through her purse and pulled out a pair of oversized sunglasses. "I probably shouldn't talk again until I've had my 2nd coffee," she said. "Anything before that is the insomnia speaking."
"Do you really have insomnia?"
She nodded. "I'm having a little mold problem. The place is filled with negative air blowers, and there are guys coming today to remove the damage and HEPA vacuum the place." Matt raised an eyebrow.
"Mold problems can be really hard to fix, and expensive. Are you sure you don't want to bail now? I was going to raise the structure anyway."
Kate felt her jaw drop. "Excuse me? You want to destroy my family's lake house so you can build some tourist trap of a restaurant? Are you serious? I will never, ever, ever let you get your hands on my house."
"I think I pushed a button best left alone for now," Matt said. "Would you consider coffee as a peace offering?"
She reached for the mug in her cup holder. "Coffee would be a wonderful peace offering. Sorry, I snapped. If I don't catch more than 3 hours of sleep in a row soon, I'm going to be giving Dina Bowen a run for her money in the cranky department. And it isn't just the blowers. I wasn't sleeping too well even before they arrived.
All night long, the house is filled with creaks and groans and whispers. At 4 in the morning, it sounds downright haunted. Not that I have issues or anything. She took a swallow of coffee. But enough of my neuroses. Why not tell me where we're going besides that motel you mentioned?
First, we've got to head to my office, he said.
Bad news, then. We're heading in the wrong direction.
My Traverse City office.
She turned her face his way, and he had to focus on the road not to smile at how cute she was in the big glasses. Okay, she said. So you do have a secret life. Are you a spy? Is this one of those I'm going to tell you but then I have to kill you road trips? Matt laughed.
You stand a better chance of being bored to death by my secret life. All the same, it's mine, and I choose to keep it among certain people. Now that I'm making you one of them, no sharing this with Ella or anyone else.
Deal, she said, and thank you.
For what?
For letting me be in the know. I've been kind of low on friendships since I moved here, and I like having one with you. She lifted one shoulder in a small shrug. I don't know, really special, I guess. It was to Matt also, but he didn't want to make the moment sappy. He went for one more kick of caffeine before setting the mug back in its holder.
Today, among other things, I have to pull the plug on a business relationship that hasn't worked out.
What kind of business? Is it at least something dangerous or exotic? He smiled at the excitement in her voice.
Sorry to disappoint, but he's another microbrewer. I gave him a rescue loan a few years back. The guy brews some great beer, and I didn't want to see him go under. But good beer isn't enough to be a success.
Do you lend money often?
When I feel it's right. I wouldn't be in business today without the help I got when I started.
That's pretty cool of you, actually.
Don't let word get out. I like it better being viewed as the tough guy in town.
So you have a full second life as a business investor?
It wasn't in the plan, but accidentally, yeah.
So why not at least tell the people at Depot what you're up to? It could save you a lot of grief.
The more success I've had, at least success from a Keens Harbor viewpoint, the tougher it's become to have any privacy. And you have to remember that I'm the guy they've had stories about since I was 8 years old and painted a bunch of the town dogs bright orange at the start of hunting season.
She laughed. Makes sense to me.
It did to me, too, especially since I'd lost a family pet to hunters a year earlier. But a legend was born, and it's only gotten worse. I guess on one level it's cool that everyone cares enough to watch me. But on another, it's tough to be under that level of scrutiny, even if it comes with a whole lot of love.
Kate had last been to Traverse City when she was 16. Back then, it had been a quaint place of cherry festivals in the summer and hot cider in the winter. Now, as she looked up Front Street, she saw it had become the home of bistros, film festivals, and Pan-Asian food. The city had grown up while she did, and apparently with fewer glitches than she'd experienced. Matt pulled around a corner and then into a city parking lot behind a 3-story red brick building. Kate grabbed her bag and tried to find a graceful way to exit his ginormous but apparently non-compensating truck.
I'm going to leave you with Ginger, my office manager, while I finish up business with Chet, he said as they headed toward the building.
You have an office manager? How many people work for you up here?
Just Ginger, and I let her choose her title. So long as people do their work, I'm happy to call them Galactic Emperor or Most Royal of Personages or whatever they want.
Matt led her up to the building's metal security door and opened it.
I'm leasing the space from the yoga studio below. It's cheap rent since it doesn't put out a fancy public face, but I don't need one of those.
They reached the third floor, and Matt opened the door to a suite marked only with its number and ushered her in. Behind a desk in the moderately sized reception area sat a movie star-looking 20-something redhead. She wore a red wrap dress with a plunging neckline, red lipstick that matched the dress, and just the right amount of mascara to show off thick black eyelashes over her green eyes.
Kate, this is Ginger Monroe, Matt said. And Ginger, this is Kate Appleton.
Ginger gave Kate a blatantly inquisitive look. Hi. Kate returned the greeting, but tried to keep her curiosity under control.
Is Chet here?
Matt asked Ginger. I sent him into your office. You might want to consider a bulletproof vest before you go in.
That bad?
Oh, yeah. Matt shot a dubious look at the closed door.
Then he knows why he's here. I'll be out in a couple of minutes.
He paused.
Or maybe even sooner.
Kate settled into a guest chair, and Ginger pulled open a desk drawer and brought out a semi-full bag of salt and vinegar potato chips.
Want some? They've got a good bite.
I love them too, but I'm all about coffee at this hour, Kate said. Ginger nodded.
Okay.
Without pausing a beat, she added,
So are you Matt's new girlfriend?
No, I just started working for him last week. Kate suddenly realized how much longer it felt, and not in a bad way. No, this was more a, what did I do with myself before all this craziness feeling?
Interesting, Ginger said.
The conversation was starting to feel a little interesting to Kate, too.
So, Ginger, have you two ever dated?
Ginger raised her eyebrows.
No, my dad would kill him. Dad was Matt's high school football coach down in Keens Harbor. Matt was a big star, but that was ages ago. I was just a kid, and then Dad changed jobs and we moved up here.
Matt was a football star? Figures. Ginger grinned.
Doesn't it? He was hot stuff. I guess he had a full ride to Michigan State, but then messed up his knee during baseball season his senior year of high school. He lost the scholarship and ended up working around town before he took off for a couple of years. Everything turned out fine, though.
Just then, the younger woman's eyes widened, giving Kate an instant of forewarning before Matt's office door slammed into the wall, and a short, heavy man whose skin color had risen to a shiny puce marched out of the office. The purple man was sputtering so much he could barely choke out his words.
You'll pay, Culhane, he said.
Matt followed him out and remained admirably impassive. Kate wanted to learn how to do that, though she suspected she lacked the talent.
I agree this is tough, Chet, but you know I've been more than fair, Matt said.
The older man's breathing was ragged, and he opened and closed his hands into fists.
Another 6 months wouldn't have killed you. Instead, you're killing me.
You have 4 weeks before I'll be filing anything. Just work on those other possibilities, okay?